I would say if the authorities didn't want us involved in the public square, they ought not to have crucified Jesus in the public square.
Use humanistic principles.
Well, I would say,
the same idea.
I would say
same
that.
End.
I would say, what's the problem with stardust bumping into stardust?
In the cosmic picture, no, there's no problem. In the cosmic picture, it won't matter.
No, Mr. President, you are not protecting reproductive freedom. You are authorizing the destruction of freedom for 1 million little human beings every year.
I'm sorry, my friends, but I am tired of seeing Jesus presented as a weak beggar. He is a powerful savior, and the gospel is not a suggestion, it is a command.
Reverend Mola, don't you sympathize with that?
I sympathize with every single human heart wishing to know the one true and living God, but I believe there's only one way that can happen, through Jesus Christ, and the gospel is about repenting of sin, not celebrating it.
Right now, you're on the threshold of an amazing adventure. We will explore the spiritual abyss. You have not experienced this before. You're gonna love it.
Look on my affliction and deliver me, for I do not forget your law. Plead my cause and redeem me. Give me life according to your promise. Salvation is far from the wicked, for they do not seek your statutes. Great is your mercy, O Lord. Give me life according to your rules. Many are my persecutors and my adversaries, but I do not swerve from your testimonies. I look at the faithless with disgust because they do not keep your commands. Consider how I love your precepts. Give me life according to your steadfast love. The sum of your word is truth, and every one of your righteous rules endures forever. That's Psalm 119, 153 to 160, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Apologia Radio. Everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Jeff, may call me the ninja. That is Luke the Bear right there.
What up? You know, we could just literally just read that whole psalm for this whole show.
Psalm 119 could just be the psalm we read for the show and say, can you still currently sing that given your theology?
That's right.
Or would it be stunted and would you have to toss out a bunch of that? Reinterpret it and re-envision it. This is the gospel heard around the world, y'all. Apologia Radio. ApologiaStudios.com is where you guys go to get more. APOLOGIA Studios.com. That's where you guys go to get hundreds of radio shows, podcast episodes, some great scholars and scientists, theologians, lots of debate and cultural engagements, everything to tickle your theological desires right there at ApologiaStudios.com. Also, if you go to ApologiaStudios.com, don't forget, you can also check out any one of our lovely, wonderful podcasts we have going on right now. We have Sheologians with Joy and Summer. Go check that out. You can get it at ApologiaStudios.com. Also, you can check out Cultish with Jeremiah and Andrew. And you can also check out Provoked with Pastor Zach and Desi. We think it'll bless you guys a bunch. Don't forget, everybody, everything you're watching right now at Apologia Studios on any platform we have is made possible through partners, ministry partners just like you. Put your hands in our hands. You join us in this ministry work. So whether it's teaching, honest street evangelism, public debates, whatever the case may be, if you see it coming from Apologia, it happened because someone just like
That's
you partnered
right.
with us in ministry. The way that you do that is you go to ApologiaStudios.com, sign up for all access. When you do, we not only want you to have the blessing of participating in this ministry, which is leading people out of the cults and out of atheism. Just so much stuff is happening around the world, saving children from death at abortion mills. But you're also going to get tons of extra content. You're going to get the Apologia television show, the after show, including Apologia Academy. It's all there at ApologiaStudios.com. And for all of you guys who are just waiting with bated breath, know that we are as well. For Bonson U, 1,900-plus lectures, seminary lectures, sermons, just great stuff, amazing, amazing, amazing content. Whether you want to talk about beginner, intermediate, advanced apologetics, if you're just getting started in your defense of the faith or your knowledge of the defense of the faith, or if you guys want to go to seminary level, that'll all be there. Stuff on ethics, the law of God, cultural engagement, books of the Bible, exegesis, historical theology, church history, it's all going to be there at Bonson U, but it's being built right now because it does take some time to upload over 1,900 lectures. And, of course, all the video content you're going to have there as well. And so that will be available at ApologiaStudios.com. Bonson U is underway right now. Please be in prayer for that because we want it up as much as you do. But we want it to be looking really, really good, coherent, easily accessible, all of that. So welcome to the show, everybody. We have a very important show for you all today. So much is happening in our world. And we know you guys are probably just as on edge as we are trying to figure out what are the days ahead going to hold. My goodness, so much is going on. So we thought we would start this discussion today at Apologia Radio talking about the United States election of the president. Let's do that by also bringing in our guest. We have a guest today, one of our good friends, one of our heroes. We love him so much. And we've had him on before. We're going to have him to join us to talk about this election stuff. But also, we're going to be responding today to Nine Marks. Nine Marks, fairly recent podcast on the issue of God's law. And we wanted to do this a couple weeks ago, but it's been a busy time of year for us. And so we wanted to have Dr. Sandlin on with us. So we're going to talk about both those things today. I think you'll be really, really loving today's episode. You'll benefit a lot from today's episode because we're going to dig into some important stuff. So let's welcome on to the show once again, Dr. Andrew Sandlin.
Thank you, guys. It's great to be on. I appreciate all that you do. You guys are just great. So keep it up.
Thank you, brother. So first question is, how are you enduring the lockdown?
Well, as we were talking before we started, our illustrious governor, who's a Democrat, by the way, it looks like he's flexing his muscles even more to sort of increase the lockdown in a number of counties, not my county, but adjacent counties. So we do live in a very deep blue state. If you don't believe that, check the voting totals from the election last Tuesday for California. So it's a bad state to live in. I live in a very conservative, you know, Trump county, but counties nearby are ultra liberal, which is why so many people from California are moving there,
right,
Jeff and Luke, to Arizona, which is probably part of the reason that Arizona, by conventional standards, apparently went for Biden, of
we'll
course,
see.
So that remains to be seen.
That remains to be seen, and there's all kinds of fraudulent stuff they're working through right now. But if you could do us a favor, Dr. Sandlin, if you could just stop them from coming here, that'd be really great. We'd appreciate that very much.
You could come
I'd like
here,
to
too.
Do that.
You could definitely come here.
We wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, we would definitely like you to come. But it is amazing, though. If you think about it, a lot of these people that sort of get crushed in Democrat run cities with the taxation and just the poor management and the lawlessness and all the rest, they go, man, I got to get out of here. I can't afford to live here anymore. It's awful.
Right.
Let me go to one of these conservative states where it's so much nicer. And then they come here and they vote for the same people.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make a lot of sense at all. I just realized something. We don't have my screen plugged in. So you can talk to Andrew for a second while I plug my screen in. And Isaac, you can make sure that it's up for me.
I was, speaking of the blue state that you live in, it was hilarious to me that the night of the election, literally like the moment the polls closed in California, they were like, it's blue, like they hadn't even like counted yet.
They do the same thing for Hawaii. As soon as Hawaii comes online, no one even waits for
and
Hawaii.
York,
they're like
blue.
But the craziest thing, Dr. Sandlin, is if you look at the Electoral College map, not all of it is accurate, by the way, at all. And by the way, just if you didn't know this, the media doesn't call the elections. There's actually a
Fox News
constitutional there's a way this is done by law in terms of states sending their Electoral College peeps to the college and convention thing, and given their official certified results. And so if you didn't know it, believe it or not, CNN, Fox News, AP, ABC, MSNBC, all those things, they actually don't call the election, and nothing they say really matters. What matters is the Electoral College.
That's right.
I'm not sure why that is news to us, but apparently it is news to us because some people hold big celebratory things saying president-elect before the votes are counted and everything is done because CNN says, because they say. Where was I? Isaac, are we up? Are we online?
We're good.
Okay. Oh, so make sure I can at least show stuff. So let's talk about the election for a minute. So I wanted to at least do that today. We're in a holding pattern right now. If you watched Sunday evening service from Apologia Church, you know that the four elders, we all came up and we addressed the congregation and spoke on what's most important for us right now as we're working through these things in our own nation. We talked about the law of God. I talked about the fact that, look, this past week, if even with the status as it is, if your soul was crushed and you're just completely just shattered over all this, then maybe your idolatry was exposed.
Yep, that's right.
We don't have hope in human governments as ultimate or any one political leader or anything like that at all. And so I really tried to challenge the church on where's your hope. Our focus should be on Christ and God's kingdom. And the church has endured persecution and difficulties over the ages. And we always conquer, and we're always victorious because the gates of hell will not prevail against the church.
Right.
We are leading the all-out assault on the world with the light of the gospel, and the gates of hell won't prevail against it. With that said, we are not in here wearing Trump shirts and MAGA hats and cheering for Trump. However, I hate communism. I hope that's been clear over the years. And if it wasn't, maybe you can take that as a soundbite. I hate communism. It is disgusting, deplorable. The system that is propagated and promulgated by the Democratic National Convention and Democratic Party is a system that turns coveting into a virtue, that prizes theft. It is the party of death. It is the party that hates God's law, tries to distort gender, all the rest. And we can go on with a list of all the deplorable, abominable parts of the Democratic platform. So do I want to see it go that direction? I don't. I know that President Trump has his own issues. The Republican Party has its own issues. Mm-hmm. However, I certainly don't want communism to kick in 2021 officially.
That's right.
And so just know, so from our perspective here, we don't want to turn into idolatry the Republican Party or Donald Trump or anybody during any election. We can't allow ourselves to be anxious and fearful when God may be judging our nation. God's in control. We can rejoice in him always. However, we're in a place right now where the election has not been called. This whole president-elect conversation is taking place nationally through all these liberal media companies. Don't buy it. Don't buy it. Isn't true. Nothing certified. It isn't true. You have court disputes taking place. And I just want, I know that I'm giving the dump right now. What?
YouTube is telling our listeners that the AP has called it. So
oh, yeah. Just so everyone knows, yeah. AP's already called it.
That's what YouTube's letting everyone know.
Yeah. So, you see, I'm saying, by the way, you can't say anything right now without getting just stepped all over by the powers that be on this issue.
I mean, they won't allow you to even do anything political right now.
We can't
completely shut down.
We can't do any pro-life ads right now. We can't even do any pro-life ads right now on Facebook because they've shut down the ability to do any political ads right now during the next 2 weeks. They are stifling the conversation. I even gave like a coded message yesterday I even took screenshots instead of sharing something, screenshots, and gave a coded message to say, look, this thing is not called yet. There's a court battle going on. And by the way, this is the thing that's sickening to me about all of this in terms of like your hypocrisy is spilling over. And it's amazing that you can't look at your feet and see that you're standing in it. It truly is. Back in the year 2000, you're old enough to remember this. And of course, Andrew, you remember this. 2000, I remember the election between Gore and Bush.
Yep.
And I remember that they called it for Gore. And then, oops, lo and behold, there's a problem. Mm. Bush is winning. Mm. So they went through 36 or 37 days,
37 days
of court battles and recounts. They did four total recounts, and Bush won every single one of them.
Yeah.
And what I have to say, I was like, oh, I remember that. And I went back this week, and I listened to Al Gore's concession speech, and I thought, dang, what an honorable man.
I would die to have Al Gore right now.
Yeah, no. I thought to myself, well, what an honorable man. If you guys get a chance, don't do it now, but later go watch Al Gore's concession speech after all the court stuff happened. He said honorably, I don't completely agree with this, but we're a nation of laws. That's how this is done. And he was like, I will uphold this because that's how our nation works. And I was like, he's a really honorable man. What is blowing my mind here is that people are acting today with such hypocrisy to like, no, it's been called. CNN called it, AP called it, CNN, they all called it. It's like, hold on. In 2000, when the Democratic guy was going through the court process to try to make sure that it was legit and there was a recount and all the rest, everybody in the country held back and said, yeah, we want this to be a legal election.
Right.
We want to make sure every vote counts. We want to make sure it's done right. And so everyone held back and was like, all right, let's find out what happens. And they got through all the court stuff. They challenged it all. And then the Democratic guy goes, you know, you're right. This is how our system works. There was a recount. And so there we go. And then Bush became president. Now we're at a place where all these major media companies are calling it, saying he's the president-elect. What does that even mean? He's the president-elect. But we still have numerous states that didn't even have their votes finished. They weren't even done counting yet. Fox News calls Arizona a blue state that had went for Biden before they even had the votes counted even close. And that's still going on today. We're still counting votes in Arizona still. There's fraud. Widespread fraud in a number of states. There are sworn testimonies that are actually these testimonies. It's the penalty of perjury. I mean, you're talking about risking even 10 years in prison for giving these testimonies. You've got a 236 page thing right now of all the sworn testimonies of people who saw fraud. That's in one place.
That's crazy.
You've got check this out. I'm going to show you this right here. Where did it go? There you go, Donald Trump. Okay, check this out, guys. President Trump, just a couple hours ago, 3 hours ago, he tweeted this. All caps, by the way. I don't know why it goes for all caps, but he does. quote, report, Dominion. By the way, if you don't know what that is, Dominion is the system, the voting system software thing in these battleground states. Okay, so that's what Dominion is. And so as Dominion deleted 2.7 million Trump votes nationwide, data analysis finds 221,000 Pennsylvania votes switched from President Trump to Biden, 941,000 Trump votes deleted. States using Dominion voting system switched 435,000 votes from Trump to Biden. Now, this is the president of the United States of America, and look, I don't care what you think about Trump or Biden. They are able to have their day in court. They've got lawyers right. working on this. They've got eyewitness right. testimony. They have people who are analyzing this data. I got to say, I just don't believe in this case that the president is gonna share this, is gonna put this out there if he doesn't know and hasn't been informed. By the way, some of this has already been proven anyway, so like, you know, why are we disputing? But this is just large. These are heavy numbers. If it is the case, this goes to the court system, and it's proven that there was fraud, and they're able to show the fraudulent ballots, and they kick those ballots out, and he goes over, my friends, he is going to have another term as president. Now, look, am I being a prophet saying it's going to happen? No, I don't know what's going to happen. Look, Biden can very well officially get certified the way it's supposed to, as an ex-president of the United States of America. He can become president, and then we're on our way to communism and a lot of judgment. But look, if it flips, I think we all need to be prepared for difficult days ahead. Before the election happened, on my way home, Fry's Electronics, big electronics store at the I-10 area, massive store. They were the day of the election. Actually, the day before. They were boarding up all access to windows and everything else all around the store in preparation for the riots and the looting that would break out. It was happening all over the country. Right now, here's my question: all this went down. Biden was called president-elect by the media, not officials, not certified, and yet weird. That's weird. Did you see any rioting or looting from any Trump people?
No.
Any conservatives you hang out with, Christians?
No.
Out in the streets, like, rioting? You didn't break a window?
If anything, we were...
You threw at least one brick.
If anything, we were loading our magazines.
Yes, that's true. No, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you didn't throw even one brick?
No, not one.
Not one?
Uh-huh.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Okay. All right, not one brick came from any of I don't even know if anybody threw a brick, and it's weird because I didn't get the thing from Soros that told us where they're stationed, where he was going to drop the bricks right. off.
Missed that notification.
But isn't it weird? All these stores across the country are like boarding up their stuff, and they're worried about what's going to happen in the election. But weird, Biden's called by the media, and it's so strange. You don't see any conservatives or Christians out there throwing bricks or rioting or looting. It's odd. That's weird. But let me ask you a question. Do you think... if the courts work through this and they show the fraudulent stuff, they prove it. I'm not talking about innuendo. They prove it, and they kick out these votes, and these states flip to Trump, and then Trump is now, again, another 4 years. Do you think there's going to be rioting and looting?
You betcha.
You better believe it. Bet your bottom dollar. That's an old person saying right there. There's going to be riots, and there's going to be looting. And so very interesting times we live in right now. Listen, it could go either way right now. This stuff has to be proven in court. But man, oh, man, is this going to be interesting.
Well, you know what's important about proving yourself in court?
What's that?
It's having 2 to 3 independent lines of witness.
Oh, that's right. There's is there a book somewhere that talks about that?
I think so.
There's a book about that, isn't there? Yeah. Hey, by the way, you can thank the Christian worldview for all the checks and balances that were put into this nation to actually work through issues like this. And you can thank the Christian worldview for the thing like cross-examination and listening to all the witnesses' testimony and making a judgment. Yeah, that all comes from God's law. Boy, it'd be good if we had that today and those principles today. You know, yeah. So anyway, Andrew, your thoughts on the current situation
with respect to the election, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you guys made some great points there. I mean, every legal vote should be counted. And I think you're right. If for somehow Trump were to end up winning the election, I think there would be massive rioting on the left because they've bought into the cultural Marxist idea that they are the elites, and if for some reason they cannot express their elitism politically, then something's wrong with the system, and the system has to be burned to the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, that's essentially what they believe. I think we also, we said some negative things. Let's remember that the president was not the only issue on the ballot, and that on the whole, Republicans, and I agree with you guys, they're not perfect, but generally far superior morally to the Democratic Party, did generally very well otherwise. In fact, picked up a number of seats in the House. They were supposed to lose seats. It looks like they're likely going to retain the Senate. That's not 100%, but likely going to retain the Senate. The judiciary is in a better shape. On state levels, the Republicans did very well. So this certainly was a mixed election, like most. And even if it ends up that Biden is in the White House, which no Christian or conservative could ever want. But if that happens, the case is certainly not lost because Jesus Christ is still on the throne. And in addition, we do have a system that has checks and balances, and Biden will be held in check, certainly on domestic policy. So it's good to remember all of these factors. And though the presidential election is vitally important, and I'm in no way diminishing that, there are other elections. And for the most part, Republicans did pretty well.
Yes, and that was one of the interesting things, Dr. Sandlin. I'm sure you noticed this as well. I'm pulling a video up here. I need everyone to see this in a second here. So, okay. What the differences between some of these elections, this was a peculiar aspect of this election. You had everything down ballot many places, Republican, 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 but all of a sudden also there was Biden elected as president in that same area
yeah.
or that same state.
Right.
So what's weird about that is some people, one person said, it's like the coattails didn't match the coat.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. You know, how are people voting in this area for all Republican down ballot? But they voted for Biden as president.
Yeah.
Strange things happening there.
Yeah.
But I wanted to show everyone this. Why does this matter? Well, here's an example of why this matters. And it's something we've been saying for a long time. We got a lot of people watching right now. So welcome to Apologia Radio. If you're here for the first time, we're glad you joined us. Why is it important? Well, when we want 4 more years of mercy, to be honest with you, a Harris administration, which is really what we're talking about here, is the fast track to communism, the fast track to hardcore pipe hitting socialism. It's not questioned. We know how radical she is. how Marxist she is, her tendencies. It's just out in the open. She does not care to hide it. It's just getting worse and worse in terms of the brazen attitude these people have towards these wicked worldviews.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting here is we've said at End Abortion Now for a long time, it's the duty of the church to implore all of our legislators to reject the fallacious opinion of Roe from the 1970s. Not only can it be demonstrated to be fallacious in terms of calling what's in the womb potential human life, it is guaranteed, beyond a shadow of a doubt, a fact biologically distinct from the mother, and it is human life from the moment of conception, unique. So it's fallacious in the first place. But our system of government mm-hmm. says that the Supreme Court does not legislate. It is Congress that legislates. They create law. The Supreme Court gives opinions. They interpret. They try to show. It is up at that point to people to go, you know, that is constitutional. That's right. We need to legislate based upon that opinion. It is right. It's constitutional. All of that. Now, Roe is declared, and all of a sudden we got into this weird space where we thought, I guess that means it's law. It isn't. Congress hasn't created right. a law about abortion. And what's amazing is you have states like Arizona and Idaho and other states who have on the books abortion is murder, considered homicide, yep. and there's jail time for it. Okay? Now, Roe doesn't affect that. Now, here's the thing. The pro-choicers and pro-aborts, they've argued, ah, oh, we've got Roe. It's law. It isn't. It isn't. And we've been saying it's not because we know what the Constitution says and how our system of government, our republic, works. But here's the problem. The pro-life industry has gone off the attitude, the belief system, the declarations of the pro-aborts and said, you know, I guess we got to overturn Roe. No, we don't. You know, no, we don't. All we have to do is, as states, reject a fallacious court opinion that kills humans and uphold our state law. Reject Roe. That's what we've been saying. It isn't a law. States, flex your sovereignty. Right. Now, here's the problem. If Roe was undone tomorrow, you're still going to have now abortion legal in the states.
Yep.
Why? Because the pro-life industry yep. has created legislation in the states saying, well, you can kill the baby, but you can't kill it after 18 weeks or 24 weeks. Guess what? That just made it legal in the states. Why? Because you assumed Roe was law. Why don't we know the Constitution and how our system of government works? And by the way, do you know what in Arizona is so beautiful at this moment? Marijuana. Now, don't get me wrong. Let me finish the thought. When I say marijuana is so beautiful, let me tell you why. We had on this ballot, which I think was highly convenient, put the marijuana recreational legalization on the same ballot as Biden. Who do you think is going to be? Who do you think those people are going to be voting for? So, very good strategy. But anyway, we had the legalization, full legalization, recreational right. marijuana. It's already legal here medically. And guess what? Here's the thing. We voted in Arizona to legalize recreational marijuana. We could all smoke up now, and you get to grow three
yep.
plants.
I know, three.
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 You get three plants. That's you excited?
It's so
you got your little, you got your little seedlings?
Yes.
So here's the deal. In Arizona right now, is going to be legal to smoke up. You can carry, which by the way, there's some benefits to that in terms of like lessening taxes and impact upon the citizens and nonviolent crimes, people having, should they be punished in jail, is a big burden upon the community you put on those. But anyway, all that's a different discussion to have, okay? Here's the deal. Guess what? Arizona legalized recreational marijuana. Here's the problem. There's federal law against marijuana and court cases against marijuana. And you know what's amazing? Colorado, California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Nevada, all said to the federal government, you pound sand.
Right.
We're doing what's right for our citizens, and we're going to vote it in. And the federal government goes, hey, now, I've got federal law about that. And then the states go, we're going to smoke up. That's it. Now, watch this. I'm going to prove to you right now, and I'm going to do it through the mouth of Joe Biden, that we need to, in the states, criminalize the issue of abortion and establish justice for the preborn and reject Roe, flex our state power and sovereignty and protect our citizens in the womb and say no to Roe, reject it. And here's why, from the mouth of Joe Biden. Check this out. This is Joe Biden doubling down on protecting Roe versus Wade. Listen to what he says here.
My youngest sister is in high school right now, and
I knew whenever I was graduating high school and entering college that I wanted to obtain my degree and start a career before starting a family. Having access to birth control and safe reproductive health care was imperative in making that true for me. So considering the new Supreme Court nomination of Amy Coney Barrett, what are your particular plans to protect women's reproductive rights in the U.S.?
All right, so pause there for a moment. Very important. What she's saying basically is while I was in college, it was nice to be able to have birth control and be able to kill my baby. Reproductive health services, meaning it was great to have the option to crush my little boy or girl's head in the womb, to have them chemically burned and injected with poison, to have their legs and arm pulled from their body. It was so nice to have that service available to me while I was working through college so that I can have what I wanted. Right. I can have the ability to have sex freely, and I could do it in a way where I didn't have to have a child that I had to take care of. And so it's nice to have that. So if Amy Coney Barrett comes into the Supreme Court and they undo Roe, whatever will we do, Mr. Biden? Now, here's what he says.
Number one, we don't know exactly what she will do, although the expectation is that she may very well move to overrule Roe. The only responsible response to that would be to pass legislation making Roe the law of the land. That's what I would do.
Wait. Wait a second.
He actually got something right.
Wait a second. They know. They know. What do they know? They know what every person who's studied even Constitution 101 should know, and they know what apparently the pro-life industry doesn't. And that is this: Roe is not law. And so what does he say? If Barrett works with the Supreme Court and they strike down the court opinion of Roe, he says, well, what we need to do is actually make it law.
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't law. And they know.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's not law. And so Christians, we should be working, A, to save lives at the abortion mill. Go to endabortionnow.com to get free training and free resources to do just that. Thousands of lives have been saved doing that. And Christian, you need to be in the public square saying Roe isn't law. Roe isn't law. And someone says, yes, it is. Say, not according to Biden. Not according to Harris. Not according to the Constitution. What are we going to do if Roe's done? We'll have to actually make abortion legal by law, right? Because it's not. Which means all the states right now, like Arizona, that have a law that says it's against the law, it's still against the law.
Right.
It's still against the law, and every abortion mill is a criminal organization killing the citizens of that state, which is why Walt Blackmun is putting in a bill in Arizona to criminalize abortion in the state of Arizona. Mm-hmm. It's weird, though, because it's like I'm saying criminalized, but it already is a criminal act, technically, under state code, and he's just basically pointing to it, going, yeah, that.
He's strengthening it.
That, yep. And let's make it stronger, and let's make it better. That's what we're doing right now. And you can do that across the United States of America. Go to endabortionnow.com, guys, to sign up or to go there to give. Give at endabortionnow.com. Help us. We got a big fight ahead of us. Luke, I'll shut up. Do you want to say something?
No, I think that's it. We're
anything you want to add to that, Dr. Sandlin?
Certainly believe strongly in states' rights, the overturning of Roe, which, of course, I would support. Nonetheless, is simply going to put this back in the states, back in the states' election anyway, which is what you pointed out that they could do right now. So not much more to say.
Yeah. Well, everybody, I wanted to show you this really. This is a kind of a funny tweet from, well, not funny, but Phil Johnson.
Really terrifying.
Yeah, check out the screen here. Phil Johnson says, I can't imagine why anyone would ever question the integrity of an election in the USA. And this is the Gateway Pundit. It's an article from the Pundit. Charges filed against trans elections judge, quote, Erica Bickford in Allentown. I'm going to click on that real fast so you guys can see it. This is something else. This is something like that nightmares are made of. Charges filed against trans elections judge Erica Bickford in Allentown, Pennsylvania, including tampering with ballots. Real name is Everett Erica Bickford, charged with two election code violations, including prying into ballots. Check this out. That would have been considered obscene unlawful. You'd have been cast out of most communities.
Yeah.
In the 60s, 70s. We've come a long way, baby. Here's a person who's a what? Election judge in Allentown, Pennsylvania? This person, this is the stuff of nightmares, friends. This person's what is he? What is he? 90 years old? He's wearing lipstick, he got no teeth to speak of, fingernails polished, and he's wearing a clergy collar with a flower hat, and man, we are in trouble. That's who's doing the election, Pennsylvania. Okay, all right. Well, I would say you need to have a moral framework, and you know, who do you want running elections? Do you want to put someone in an election who literally looks like they got dressed up for Halloween? I mean, this is like a. I'm sorry, I got to be straight, and I got to speak against evil as evil.
Right.
This is something that's like a poster child for a horror film.
It's an abomination.
It is an abomination, and this is the person you're putting in charge of an election or as a part of election. This person has no moral compass to speak of, and this person is now being put in charge of voting, and you're wondering why things are going the way they are in our country. Well, I think that's a good article to take a look at from Phil. All right, let's get to it now. So, here we go. Nine Marks. You said very highly recommend Nine Marks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we have stuff in our church membership manual from Nine Marks.
Yeah, yeah. So, back in the day, loved them. Great stuff, right? And I haven't been keeping up with them.
Yeah.
So you know, first say, as a foundation, we've used stuff from Nine Marks before. Really appreciated them. I used to actually send people to the site and say, these are the things you want to look for in a good, solid, healthy church.
I still would.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't had any issues till this. So.
Good stuff. Recently, they had episode 147 on the appeal and the errors of theonomy with T. David Gordon. This is by Jonathan Lehman. And so they did a little conversation about theonomy. We are what you might call modern-day Puritans. We hold to much of what they taught and they thought. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the early founders of the American experiment, the descendants of the Covenanters, the Huguenots, the Puritans, the Pilgrims, all of them, they had a particular perspective about the future.
Right.
And they had a particular perspective about the law of God. And you can see that worked out in the fact that the world, the biblical worldviews and the atmosphere, it's what created and established really good justice in this nation. It wasn't a utopia, but I think when John Jay, our first Supreme Court justice, was writing out case law in the United States of America and referring back to God's judicial law, I think he did a good thing. I think it was a good thing. Dr. Stanlin, help us here for new listeners. What is theonomy? Help us understand, what is theonomy and why is it evil?
Well, so then denotatively, theonomy just means God's law. Presumably, all Christians, if it were explained to them, would be theonomists in that sense. But when we use the term theonomy today, we're not just generically returning to God's law, which itself would be great, but to biblical law. It's important to make that distinction. Yep. Because a lot of people will talk about natural law, and even some of the founders did, although in my view, many of their views of natural law were based on the Mosaic law. But when we talk about theonomy today, it's really equivalent to what I'd call biblionomy, the authority of biblical law. I don't understand how any Christian can believe the Bible, the authority of the Bible in every aspect, and not hold to some sort of biblionomy, the authority of God's law. Unfortunately, the church today has become utterly pietistic, which holds that the faith should apply between my two ears and maybe in the family and to a degree in the church, but not anywhere else. And of that, the New Testament is authoritative, and perhaps not even all of that. But the Old Testament, the Mosaic law, for example, is not authoritative. Well, the problem with that is Jesus and the apostles, writers in the New Testament, did assume that the Old Testament was authoritative, unless, of course, certain specific aspects of it were set aside, like the ceremonial law, for example. But the moral law of God, including how it's to apply in politics and elsewhere, they would have just assumed and did assume. So theonomy equals biblionomy, the authority of biblical law in all of life. That, by the way, is the standard of righteousness, not just for God's people, but for everybody.
Right. You know,
is Paul says that. Yeah, Paul says that in Romans 3, 19, 20, if you read that. The law of God, he says there, the law of God speaks to everyone, so everyone will stand guilty before God. So the law of God binds everybody.
So the whole world will have their mouth closed.
The whole world, he says. That's the right. language. Yeah.
That's right. The whole world, exactly. So it wasn't just for Israel.
Exactly.
And you do see in God's law, say in Leviticus 18, 16, I believe, go check it out, guys. You'll see that God actually, when he tells people, say, on the even example of like bestiality and homosexuality, he says it's because of those sins that he's uprooting those other foreign nations. So he's actually right. judging them according exactly. to the law that he says is an abomination.
Right.
He's judging
right.
those foreign nations according to his stipulated standards. He doesn't have one standard for Israel and one standard
exactly
over
right.
here. He actually judges and uproots them, and he displaces them on the basis of his own law, his own holy character. Now, here's the thing I want to ask before we start playing this, and we're not going to get through the entire thing today, guys, but just at least a start to this conversation. Andrew, you're going to hear in a moment now, when they start to talk about this, they talk about it as though this is some new movement of people believing in God's law as the righteous standard that people should look to today, even in a judicial context. And we would be general equity theonomists ourselves. We don't think you take the law of God and you drop it down on society.
Exactly.
That's not what
right.
we believe. But Andrew, is this new? Is this a new movement of people trying to do something neat and cute and, you know, popular? Or is theonomy new?
That's not just wrong, Jeff. It's embarrassingly wrong.
Yeah.
Historians would know that. Whether you agree with theonomy or biblical law at all, and if you don't, that's fine. You make that choice. But what you can't assert is that historically this is somehow innovative or new. The fact is a large number of Puritans, English Puritans and American Puritans, a large number of them, Scottish Covenanters and others, believed in the authority yep. of biblical law or biblionomy. So, okay, we may be wrong. I obviously don't believe we are, but this is not some new thing that was developed over the last 40 or 50 years.
Right. Yeah, yeah, and I always find that interesting when people make that claim about theonomy. They'll say, oh, you know, Greg Bahnsen popularized this. He wrote Theonomy and Christian Ethics, and it created a big controversy. You know, it really came from there. I'm like, well, you know, you also got Rush Dooney you got to throw in there as well. But you need to look yeah. at the fact that throughout Christian history, whenever Christians came and evangelized a nation, and that nation came to obedience to Jesus Christ and trust in Jesus Christ, are we really suggesting that they weren't going to God's law in terms of their judicial system to mm-hmm. say, what does God say mm-hmm. is just to do in this situation? I mean, go ahead.
The reason this was controversial, Jeff, is because the church has apostatized
yes.
so exactly. far from the authority of God's law that when people like Bahnsen and others brought this to the fore, they were just uncomprehending that it was new. Well, the problem was that the new idea, the innovative idea, is that God's law is not authoritative in society.
Exactly right.
That is an apostasy from what was held certainly by people on this shore and in England and in much of Europe, for that matter.
Exactly.
Well, I was going to say, even those that want to say, well, our law is based upon English common law. Well, where did English common law
English
come
common
from?
English common law, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, a good reference point that we often point to at Apologia, because we have a church on the island of Kauai, when missionaries went over to the Hawaiian Islands in the 19th century, 1820, when they made their way over there and started evangelizing the people on the Hawaiian Islands, within 20 years, over 90% of the Hawaiian Islands were professing faith in Jesus Christ.
Yep.
And within 20 years, they had a Hawaiian Kingdom Constitution. Just get this. Go look it up yourself. The Hawaiian Kingdom Constitution. 20 years of missionary work, over 90% of the islands professing faith in Jesus. And it says in the Hawaiian Constitution, it says that no law of the Hawaiian Kingdom will be at variance with the laws of Jehovah God.
Amen.
That was the 19th century, guys. And that's not unlike what we see throughout Christian history when the gospel is victorious over a nation and a people, and the question is, how shall we live? What shall we do?
Yeah, and by the way, And by the way, guys, that's true of almost all any of the Bible-believing Protestant churches, even those we would agree with and disagree with, Arminian, Lutheran, some Anglican. On this point, they're virtually, and I mean not the liberals, but I mean before liberalism, all of them agreed. Wesley was an Arminian. He believed in the authority of God's law. Martin Luther, despite the fact I think he was very confused, he believed in the authority of God's law. So this modern idea we're going to kick God's law to the curb, that really is an aspect of apostasy.
Yeah, and let's go ahead and start playing it now. We'll go ahead and get into it, guys. Just stop me whenever you want. We're going to do our best to try to get through as much of this today as we can.
I'll just say before you start, if Mark, Dever, or the other two gentlemen happen to hear this, like, my encouragement would be please do your homework before you do a show on this. Because like we said, we have a lot of respect for Mark specifically and Nine Marks. And I'll be honest, when I heard this, I was like, wow. This is bad. Like, it's really bad. So that's, I just want to throw that out there before you start anything. So.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
To the topic of theonomy. Now, if you had asked me a year ago, David, hey, what's to do with theonomy? And I've been like, I think a couple of theology eggheads back in seminary talked about Greg Bonson, but nobody really pays much attention to that. Whereas these days I'm like, okay, this seems to be catching the wind a little bit. I wouldn't say there's a major interest in it, but there is something of a minor
interest
bubbling up. Now,
Jonathan, for people who are listening, you don't.
I'd really like to talk about that just for a moment here. Praise God. I think Apologia has had a huge impact in this area in terms of challenging people to say, by what standard?
Exactly.
The myth of neutrality, saying Jesus says you're either with me or you're against me. We've been promoting that. You've got all of it. You've got Doc Sandlin, all the work that he's done over the years. You've got Gary DeMar. You've got these giants that have been doing this for a long time, and there's a lot of fruit of this now. You've got Doug. You've got all of our boys over at Cross Politic. It's having an impact, and here's why it's having an impact. Brothers, I'm talking to my brothers over here at Nine Marks. Here's why it's having an impact, because we're living in a time where people are noticing the cultural abandonment that's taken place, noticing the fact that, you know, these issues of justice matter. And by the way, if you peruse Nine Marks, you're going to see some stuff about social justice. People are noticing, like, it's not really good that the church hasn't been salt and light in these areas, and there are issues of injustice that we need to address. And the question is, by what standard? So many people are saying, man, there's a lot of chaos out there, a lot of challenges, and it doesn't seem like the modern evangelical church in the West has any kind of response that's coherent. I mean, it's sort of ollie-ollie oxen free, like every man for himself.
That's
like, what do you think? What does she think? What does he think? Which way should we go here? Whereas many people, I think, are actually saying, well, wait a minute, look here. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, God says about his law in verse 5, see, I have taught you statutes and rules as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should do them in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. Keep them and do them, for that will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who, when they hear all these statutes, will say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people, for what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us whenever we call upon him? And what great nation is there that has statutes and rules so righteous as all this law that I set before you today? You know, many Christians are seeing that and are going, God calls his law, they're good. It's not just a curse upon fallen people. It's good. These are righteous statutes, good statutes. And then reflecting on what Jesus said, then I'll shut up here and kick it over to you, Andrew. Reflecting on what Jesus says, love the Lord God with all your heart and soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. And he says, all the law and the prophets are built upon love for God, love for neighbor. All. All. That would include all that stuff about cross-examination of witnesses, upholding victims' rights, proper punishment for perpetrators that will actually bring justice for the victims. That is all about loving God and loving neighbor. Andrew?
Yeah, no, here's the problem. You really touched on it, Jeff. But whether at Nine Marks or elsewhere, and many good, well-intentioned people, if you believe that the faith should apply in the individual life, in the family, and at most in the church or maybe Christian schools or Christian colleges, and then we put up the walls. If I say you believe in that, you're not going to be interested in biblical law applying in society. And that's why it's opposed. But anybody who believes the faith should apply outside the church, if you're a Protestant, you're going to be interested at least in biblical law, because biblical law apply in the Bible clearly applies in every aspect of life. However, if you want to limit the Christian faith inside the church, and of course it should be practiced there, but not just there. If you believe it should be limited there, you're going to say, well, no, we're not really interested in biblical law in the wider society because it wasn't designed for that. So you're precisely correct that if you look at culture and culture is going to hell in a handbag and cultural Marxism is everywhere and abortion is pervasive and on and homosexuality and so on, and you're going to say, well, does God have any opinion on this? Mm. And you're going to open up the word. You're going to say, well, it looks like he does. And his law is not just for the family and the church, but wider. You're going to be very open to the idea of theonomy or biblionomy. Mm. And this is a real division, by the way, not only in the church, but in the Reformed church. As you see, these are Reformed brothers, correct? Of course they are. Mm-hmm. Yet nonetheless, they tend to be on what we would sort of call the pietistic wing of the Reformed church, the wing that believes in reformation of the church, and we do want reformation of the church, and apology is a part of that, but not only in the church. If we believe in the lordship of Christ in all of life, we have to be open to the idea mm-hmm. that his word applies in all of life, yeah. and that is where God's law comes in.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I just want to say first, it's so good to see Andrew's face, because usually know. We only have him on a phone call. So
that's right. We get nice to see his face.
But second, well, now your listeners are going to go down and way, way down now that they've seen my face.
Actually, we have a record number of listeners today, I think. But the other thing I was going to say is we know this from experience. Typically, those who, even solid Christians that oppose theonomy, usually end up mocking theonomists they end up literally mocking God's law. Like, that's ridiculous. Why would you want? And that's what we have. This is how they start off this discussion, by just mocking, kind of dismissing, like kind of laughing it off. Like, oh, is this still a thing? Like, I thought this was dead a while ago. You know, and like when I hear stuff like that, it's like, that's immediately like, okay, you didn't even study this.
Yeah, you're in a small bubble, and you should know the Puritans are alive and well. Here we go.
That's right.
Anything about theonomy, but they do know their languages. You're just talking about God's law.
Theo,
what's wrong with God's law?
Well, yeah, let me ask you that. David, I heard somebody say, well, every Christian's a theonomist because we all believe in God's law. Is that true, or is that a bit broad brushing it?
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, my students often ask me to explain something in terms of its etymology. And as we know in Greek, for instance, because I teach Greek here, when you add prepositions to the front of verbs, unless they're traveling verbs, you don't just add the definition of the preposition of the verb. You can change it entirely. Mm-hmm. So if you take a simple verb like lambano, receive, and you put it in the middle passive voice, and you add the preposition soon in front of it, and the preposition anti, you get soon anti lambanatai, and that's the word that appears in Romans 8, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. How mm-hmm. soon with anti, against, and be received, how that becomes help is, you know, who knows? So if you're asking... But the point about theonomy, it should have been called synonymy or mosionomy, because it wasn't just divine law that they were proposing. They were proposing that the Mosaic law given to the peculiar Israelite theocracy should be the law of other nations, right? Mm-hmm. So they weren't just saying that humans should follow the divine order established in creation and revealed. They were saying that civil governments should model themselves after the Israelite theocracy and that governed hers. So we don't care about the name. Theonomy could be a perfectly good abstract term that means our recognition of the divine order in his creation and our submission to it, but that's not what theonomists mean. They mean that the Mosaic law, even the civil laws of Moses, right, are to endure forever. And so it rejects...
Well, Psalm 119, 160... The sum of your word is truth, and every one of your righteous rules endures forever. Now, how that plays out, you see in Scripture, brothers. You do see it in Scripture. It enduring. What? The Mosaic legislation. How? Well, I mean, this is, I think, is apparent to all of us. It's in the text. You always see that the apostles assume the continuity of the law of God. Unless, of course, they have divine revelation to show how something is done differently or has changed or fallen away because it's no longer necessary. And it's always the assumption of continuity with respect to the law of God. In terms of the Mosaic legislation, well, you have the Apostle Paul talking to Timothy, and he says, you're not to muzzle the ox while it treads. He just quotes it like it's just assumed. Come on now.
That's right.
You're not supposed to muzzle the ox while it treads. Now, brothers and sisters, that is animal husbandry law from the Mosaic legislation.
Yeah, and Jeff, that's a good example, as you said, of general equity. We don't really, today, we don't really use oxen, at least most of us don't. But Paul was taking that general equity, the principle, saying the principle applies actually in the church also. So if he does that in the case of this particular animal husbandry law in an agrarian society, he's really saying any society, in principle, any society should be governed by the general equity of all of these laws of Mosaic legislation. And by the way, they were wrong about the idea that this is only about Mosaic legislation. Those who hold to the authority of biblical law hold to all of the Bible as authoritative.
Right.
We don't simply hold up the Mosaic law and say, well, that's authoritative, but, you know, we don't really care that much about Isaiah or Matthew. That's false. We believe all the Bible's authoritative.
That's right. That's very, very good.
I feel like this is a bit of a straw man, too, because it's almost like he doesn't come out and say, but it's almost like he's implying that the Mosaic law came from Moses.
Right.
And not from God.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, that Mosaic law, where did that come from? That didn't come from Moses.
Yeah, and a good point. And talking about this, he talks about like a peculiar people, this peculiar nation of Israel. They had this Mosaic legislation. You know, I think we should just go to it and read a passage like Deuteronomy chapter 4. What did God say he was doing when he gave them those righteous statutes?
Right.
He said he was doing something that was supposed to be their wisdom in the sight of the peoples, the pagan nations, are supposed to see these righteous statutes, and they were going to say, whoa, a nation with righteous statutes like this. They were supposed to like long for that kind of liberty and that kind of true justice. And here is the all-knowing, all-powerful, eternal God telling you, this is justice. This is righteous. This is protecting victims. This is how you do it. And brothers and sisters, people are still raping in 2020. People are still stealing in 2020. They're still lying. They're still perjuring. They're still abusing. It's still happening today. So the question is this: how shall we then live?
Exactly.
And by what standard should we actually apply righteous rules and statutes to the current sins and crimes that are still happening? Are you supposed to just do it by your own human wisdom? Or do we say, no, God has actually spoken to what is just here?
Yeah, and Jeff, they're never consistent with that, because almost all of them, at least if they're reformed, and these brothers are, will say, oh, we believe in the abiding authority of the Ten Commandments. Well, wait a minute. That's in the Mosaic legislation.
Right.
So what right have you today to say, we'll take these 10 words, the Ten Commandments, we'll elevate them, but the rest of it we'll kick to the curb.
Right.
Well, nobody in the Bible ever would have said that or assumed that.
That's right.
So there's a remarkable inconsistency here.
Yeah, and brother, you brought up a good point there in terms of the Ten Commandments. Everyone, if you say right now, hey, you know, Ten Commandments, that abides for today, I'd say, thank you. You just gave me the entire Mosaic legislation, because Jesus says love for God, love for neighbor is what all the law and the prophets are based upon. Love for God, love for neighbor. And you see that in the Decalogue. You see that in the Ten Commandments. You see love for God. Don't have a God that looks like me. Don't make God that looks like me. Don't have a God in my sight. You should not take my name in vain. Love God, love God, love God. And then love neighbor is don't lie to them. Don't commit adultery. Don't murder them. Don't covet their stuff. Oh, we're seeing love for God, love for neighbor. But what's amazing in the Mosaic legislation is that God speaks to what is just to do if someone violates love for neighbor. For example, if they steal, the right just penalty if they steal is A, B, C, depending on what they've stolen and was it applicable to business, that kind of stuff. But you also have, what if they do murder? So God says, you should not murder. Is that abiding today? Yes. He says, and here's what you do if they do murder. Here's how you're to handle it in a way that protects the victim, the victims in those cases, and also brings justice in that area. You see, this stuff is still happening today. So the question I have for these brothers who are questioning these things is, what's your response to murder today, or to rape today, or to sexual perversions today? What is your response?
Good job, Jeff.
Yeah.
If not God's law, then what?
Yes.
Yep.
And they'll always come back with, well, sociological law, or if the Roman Catholic natural law, which is a wax nose. I mean, Hitler believed in natural law.
Sure did.
Or judicial, or latest leftist judicial law from Harvard Law School. So really what they're saying is, it's not just we're wanting to kick God's law to the curb. Law is inescapable. Civil law is inescapable. So what they're really saying is, we will prefer man's idea somewhere else rather than God's law. They don't like to admit that, but in essence, that's what they have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we'll all end on this point here. In terms of the assumption of continuity you see in the New Testament, a couple things. I'll just throw them out fast. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this today. A, I gave you one, Paul to Timothy. By the way, that's post-cross, post-resurrection, post-ascension. Okay, so timing here is important. The Apostle Paul, Jesus has accomplished atonement. Everything is done and behind him. He's reigning and he's on his throne, putting his enemies under his feet. And the Apostle Paul says to Timothy, you're not to muzzle the ox while it treads. There's a righteous principle of doing what? Feeding people who work for you. But that's animal husbandry from the Mosaic legislation, friends.
That's
and
right.
Paul just assumes it. I'll give you another one. Paul says, in that same context, he says, don't receive an accusation against an elder unless it's based on the two or three witnesses. Hey, guess what? Brothers and sisters, he's quoting from the Mosaic legislation in terms of judicial law and receiving accusations. That
right.
has
he
to...
wasn't talking specifically there about elders in the church, but Paul applies it there.
Yes.
That shows the wideness of the authority of yeah. God's law.
Yeah, that shows you that general the general equity of that judicial code still applied after the cross, after the resurrection, after the ascension. And the amazing thing is watch this, Paul just assumes it. Like, you're supposed to know this. And he assumes it in the sense of going, not saying, well, now we know that whole thing is done and defunct and it's over and that awful law was just overbearing, but I like these tidbits over here. We'll pull these over. He does it with animal husbandry law. He does it with judicial law in terms of how to handle accusations in the court. The Apostle Paul just assumes it with kids. In Ephesians 6, he says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. And then he quotes from the Decalogue, honor your father and your mother. It's the first commandment with a promise. Hey, wait a second. I thought all that's just defunct and over and gone. He's just assuming it, kids. You're supposed to know this. Also, in terms of the death penalty, the Apostle Paul, after the cross and resurrection and ascension, when he's on trial in Acts 25, he says, if I've done anything worthy of death, I don't object to dying. Hey, wait, has that changed? Has the atonement of Christ and his resurrection changed God's standard for what is right in terms of even the death penalty? Paul says, if I've done anything worthy of death, mm-hmm. I don't object to dying. Mm-hmm. In other words, there are things in the new covenant that are worthy of the judicial penalty of death. Paul says, and if I've done anything, then I don't object to dying. Why? Because it would be righteous for you to do so. Now, of course, he didn't, but you even have the death penalty affirmed there. You've got a number of examples here we can show where they are pulling from judicial law, animal husbandry laws, Ten Commandments, and I'll give you another one too to just consider in terms of the festivals and everything else. Well, the Apostle Paul tells them, like, here's how you're supposed to see it. It still abides today that what you're doing, what he was trying to teach you, is still a principle today that abides in terms of the festival. Like, you're not to go around like wiping out the leaven now. He says you're supposed to purge from yourselves the leaven of malice and wickedness. Like, so it's still what that was trying to teach you. It still is there today, but you're not doing it in the old way. Now you're not doing it in the ritualistic way or the dress rehearsal way. It's still there. Mm-hmm. We still have a priest. We still have a temple. We still have blood sacrifice. It's just completed. And all these righteous principles abide. They're not all just dropped on us. And guess what? I'm eating bacon today, baby. And someone says, well, how can you say? Because this is where people get jammed up. They go, yeah, I see that. You're right about that. It's God's righteous standards and all the rest. So what are you saying? We need to like do the dress code thing and the animal stuff? No. Why? Well, because the New Testament gives you divine revelation that tells you what that stuff meant and how it is no longer done that way.
Right.
For example, Ephesians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul talks about the holiness code and talks about how that was supposed to be this dividing wall. It was supposed to teach the people of God separation, holiness, but it's no longer there any longer, and Jews and Gentiles are brought together in one body. And so, I eat animals today. Why? Because Jesus told me to. Because Jesus said so. And the Apostle Paul says it's no longer applicable in the same way. Ah, this is important, though. What the holiness code was doing in dress rehearsal form for the Israelites is still applicable today to the believer. Yeah. Separation from sin, not engaging in syncretism, not blending with the pagan cultures and adopting their practices and being like them, not being unholy like them is forbidden. What they were doing in ritual and dress rehearsal form because of Christ and the indwelling of the Holy Spirit of God and the law now written within me is no longer necessary. But guess what? All of it is still in principle true. So, Andrew, if you could speak to that, because those are the issues I think come up a lot with people.
I was hoping you wouldn't ask me, Jeff, because in the last 10 minutes, you've given a veritable theonomy primer. I mean, you've said everything substantively, I think, that needs to be said. So I will just point out, rather than going over what you said, which is, I mean, I obviously endorse, is sort of turning the tables on those like you're from Nine Marks and elsewhere that are the strong critics of theonomy and asking them, do you really believe in the authority of the Word of God in total? Now, if they say yes, but we interpret it differently, well, the question is, as you pointed out, Jeff, the New Testament itself, the New Testament writers did not interpret the Old Testament differently than what you did. But it is interpreting. They did interpret it differently from what the non-biblical law folks, the non-biblionomy folks are interpreting it. So therefore, what we're really saying is though they affirm the formal biblical authority, and I'd never accuse them of anything otherwise, they do in their hearts believe that they believe in biblical authority. They really don't in their practice. And I think as things become more apostate, and I'm post-millennial, but I mean in the short term, things might get, particularly like you pointed out, in a Biden administration, short term, things might get worse. Christians more and more will crave a word from the Lord. What is the word from the Lord? Not just reading my Bible every day, not just hearing a sermon on Sunday, but is there a word from the Lord about homosexuality and how it should be dealt with? Is there a word from the Lord about property in society? Is there a word from the Lord about health care? How should health care be paid for? Is there a word from the Lord about how children should be protected, how children should be raised? Is there a word from the Lord about the environment, about how we should treat the environment? Is there a word from the Lord on all these things? And the answer is, yes, there is. It's in the Word of God. We can't read around that and simply think that God is interested only in baptism and the Lord's Supper, vital though they are. He's also interested in these other matters. I think Christians that have a heart for God, as they see what's going on in culture, will crave this message, and they are right to do so.
Absolutely.
That's good.
The distinction made in chapter 19 of the Westminster Confession. And Mark, I'm not sure if it's chapter 19 in the London Baptist or not, because the chapters are not always in sync with each other. But in the chapter on the law of God, at least in Westminster, 1 and 2 deal with the moral law. And then sections 3 and 4 deal with the ceremonial and the civil law, and arguing they both have been abrogated together with the state of those people. And theonomy disagrees with that. And it lumps the civil law in with the moral law. Bonson often writes moral hyphen civil law. So instead of seeing them as separate categories, as the Reformed traditions have, he sees the civil law as a part of the moral law.
David, you refer to Bonson.
And for good reason. for good reason, there's a moral aspect
right
to the civil law that God gave. For example, the Apostle Paul appeals to that. Is it a moral aspect to require 2 to 3 witnesses? That's from God's judicial law. Mm-hmm. Is it moral to ask that? Apparently, the Apostle Paul thinks post-cross and post-resurrection and ascension that it's still a moral question. There are moral aspects. All of that is moral. There's a moral aspect and character to all of those statutes, and they were supposed to be seen as righteous. I mean, is righteousness a moral category? Because God calls them righteous statutes. So there is a moral character. And by the way, this business with referring to the Westminster Confession and London Baptist, talking about it passes away with those people. No, there's more to it than that. And they're going to get to that in a moment here. Except for the general equity is required. And that's what we're talking about. No one. I've never met anybody, except maybe some Hebrew roots people,
yeah,
who are talking about dropping this stuff down like the Mosaic administration on society. I wouldn't recommend any of that. But we're talking about historically the Westminster Divines and those who would even be considered theonomists today. They were talking about general equity. The peculiar aspects of the Mosaic legislation, we're not arguing that people should go and start putting railings around the roofs of their houses, because that's what the Mosaic legislation says. But we are telling people,
that's right,
God's law demands that you protect and preserve human life, and you do it on your property. So if you have a well or a pool, the principle there is you protect and preserve human life. on your property. So you better do it around your pools and wells. And if you've got wires exposed in your house that can shock and kill somebody, you better do something about that. You preserve human life. We don't tell people to take the Mosaic legislation exactly as it was given then and just drop it on modern society because it wouldn't make any sense. Also, in terms of like muzzling your oxes, how many of us own an ox? I think I got rid of mine 2 years ago. I don't know. Like, I mean, seriously, we look at that and we say, how did Paul do it? He talked about it in terms of paying pastors for working. But the principle, guess what? It applies outside the church as well. Do you think God's going to hold somebody responsible if they're an employer, if they're an unbelieving employer, and they've got something working for them, and they don't pay that person for working for them? Is God going to apply not muzzling the ox to the unbeliever? You better believe he is. It's a wicked thing not to pay somebody for their work. And so, of course, that's going to apply outside the church. Andrew?
No, that's exactly right. And I heard him say there, if I'm not mistaken, that theonomists strongly disagree with the Westminster Confession and London Baptist at 19:4. Well, that's very odd. Greg Bonson was an ordained minister in good standing in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, which holds as a standard the Westminster Confession. And he held very strongly to 19:4. Now, they may disagree with his interpretation of 19:4. But to say that he doesn't really believe that is false, and it's actually slanderous. I think they did it unintentionally, but it's actually slanderous.
Right. Yeah, he has actually, by the way, and you'll be able to pull him at Bonson U when we get it up. You'll be able to listen to his lectures on the confession as well and what he says about that.
And can you spell that and just tell us who that is?
Yeah, Greg Bonson, B-A-H-N-S-E-N. So it's Sin, S-E-N, not S-O-N. He passed away about 14 or 15 years ago.
He
passed away in 95. So they're a little off there.
Yeah. So I mean, guys, I know we make mistakes, but I mean, he's been gone for a while with the Lord, and it's just things like this where it's like, look, I know we're gonna slip here or there, but there's a lot of misrepresentation here, and just it shows like you just guys, brothers, you just haven't done your homework.
He had some heart troubles, so I think he died a little bit on the young side. He wrote about a 940-page book called Theonomy in Christian Ethics that was sort of like the encyclopedia of theonomy. It was the strongest argument for the theonomic approach.
And does it remain the kind of main source, main
I think
resource?
So. Yeah, I think so.
Now,
It's one. I mean, honestly, it's just a one-shot deal. It's excellent. Theonomy and Christian Ethics is excellent. But I mean, if you want like some expanded stuff, I mean, you got to go way beyond Bonson, and there's plenty of stuff out there. Wouldn't agree with everything Rush Dooney wrote, but Rush Dooney's Institutes of Biblical Law, you know, and stuff he wrote, sort of unpacking the judicial case law and showing the moral character of it and all the ways that we would apply it today. I mean, you'd look at Rush Dooney, you know, then I'd say, if you look at the history of Christian church, there's just no end to examples of Christians who wrote on this. I mean, I'll tell you what, man, go spend some time. Look, if you're Presbyterian and you have Presbyterian tendencies, go read the Covenanters. Any one of them and ask them how they would have thought about God's law in modern society. I mean if you're Presbyterian, these are like the king hero Presbyterians. How did they feel about theonomy? Is your perspective like theirs was? I don't know. Yeah. I think it's important to ask these questions. Mm.
Yeah, and John Murray before that, his book on Christian ethics and so on, and going back to the late 19th century, and certainly going back, as we indicated earlier, to the Puritans. So the idea that nobody knew of this idea of the authority of God's law in society and in politics, somehow until Greg Bonson wrote Theonomy and Christian Ethics, that's just an irresponsible assertion.
Just a couple eggheads just roaming around Westminster.
Right. Didn't have anything better to do than to write 900-page tomes on theonomy. No, yeah. I'm sorry. He's wrong about that.
Yeah, that's very wrong.
You mentioned the Westminster Confession 19 and then in that fourth paragraph. In fact, I have it in my notes because this is what I've been hearing pop up. It reads, to them also, as a body politic, he gave sundry, referring to Israel, sundry judicial laws, which expired with the state of that people, not obliging any other now, further than the general equity thereof may require. So those things have expired, not obliging us now, except for what general equity requires. And I heard this one individual say, well, I'm a general equity theonomist. Do you know what he would mean by that? What does that mean?
Well, I don't know what he would mean by it, but in the 18th and 17th centuries, it was a common enough expression. Uh-huh. And general equity meant not specific to any particular people. So things like regard for your neighbor's person and his property that you find in French law, you find it in British law, you find it in American law, German law, and so forth.
And how did it get there?
Yeah, yeah, that's fascinating, Jeff. His definition of general equity is correct, but his derivation from that is false. I mean, general equity, the body politic, Israel as a covenant people expired, but the general equity, that is the truths of the law, that's what continues. What he wasn't saying there, what 1904 wasn't saying there is, oh, let's look at, we would today, like he said, France or Australia or the ancient Roman Empire, and let's just see kind of what they had in common with the Bible. That's not what 1904 was talking about.
Yeah, and I think it is interesting when he refers there in that specific point there to French law, British law. I just have to point out what should be obvious to all of us. How do you think it got into French law? And we talk about like regard for your neighbor's property, you know, all that stuff that would have been in French law, British law, common law. How do you think it got there? What do you think those Christians were doing when they were legislating? Think they were just sort of on their own wisdom saying like these things? Right. What do you think they were thinking about? What was being preached to them? What were they referring to? Where were they getting these statutes from and these rules and these general equity principles? They were getting them from God's law.
Exactly.
It didn't exist in a vacuum. And I just want to say this. Look, I mean, there's tons of cultures all around the world that have all kinds of really crazy legislation. And atheistic cultures do not build righteous statutes. They don't. And in history, you have any number of examples of people who deal with, say, even the crime of theft in ways that are totally wicked, either killing the person for theft or cutting off their hand and maiming them for life for stealing a loaf of bread or what have you. I mean, there are a number of examples of pagan societies that are not simply through natural law coming up with righteous legislation.
Right.
So the question is, where do you get it from? Because I have that question to press on the believer today who wants to say, I don't think we need to look at his disclosure of what is just to do with a thief. I want to say, okay, so we've got a couple options today. You've got people saying things like, God's law says, and you list them, you know, whether what was stolen, was it for business? You know, it basically is you pay it back and then it's double. So you make the person whole again. And so you've got God's stipulated standard. Then you've got other cultures that simply say, look, I think you should cut their hand off. Maim them.
Yeah.
How dare you steal? So we'll make sure you never do again. We'll cut your hand off so you can't. Or you've got somebody might say, kill him. Kill him. Or in our culture today, we say, he stole from you? All right, let's put him in a cage. Yeah. How much is that going to cost? Oh,
that's
a lot.
Right.
Oh, a lot.
And allow him to be raped over and over again. It's just utterly, God's law is, I can assure you, much more humane than man's law.
Oh,
clearly.
Goodness gracious. I mean, think about it. And Andrew's exactly right. There are consequences of putting men into these cages, and image bearers have gone into cages for long periods of time. But you ask the question, the guy stole something. He goes in a cage today, according to American culture's stipulated statutes. And we say, all right, he stole something. It was worth $1,000. All right, so put him in the cage. Well, how much is that going to cost? Well, we got to pay the enforcement officers. Yeah. You got to pay for the cages, the electricity. You got to pay for his food. You got to pay for his health care, possibly a sex change operation. Oh, that's going to be a heck of a lot of money. How much did he steal? $1,000. We're looking at about $100K maybe or so.
You're going to pay for it.
Well, how are we going to get that money? Well, we're going to force the community around. Wait, quick question on that. What did the community around the crime, what'd they do to participate in the crime? Oh, nerfing. Nothing. But you're going to take money from them to pay for the $1,000 theft. You're going to put them in a cage, healthcare, food, have them watched, electricity, all that stuff. Right. For how much? For the $1,000 theft. Great. Okay. How much is it going to cost? Oh, loads. Okay. How are you going to get the money from the community? Property taxes. We'll figure out some way to do it. Well, what if they don't want to pay you? Well, then we'll put them in jail or we'll take their stuff by coercive force. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, so we're going to have all of society paying for this man's crime. Do you see the point here? So my question is this. If God's law says this is the just penalty for theft, you've got a myriad of options today. My question is, you're one voice amongst a bunch. I say God has spoken on this as to what's just, what protects society, what protects and upholds victim rights. And there's a number of other options. My question is to the person who rejects God's law today in terms of his stipulated statute as to what's righteous there, what standard are you going to? Your own wisdom? Because lots of people are doing that. Mm-hmm. They're all doing it. They know theft is wrong because they're made in God's image, but they don't all handle the justice issue the same way. They handle it in very different ways. So let me ask a question. Should we cut someone's hand off today? And someone says, no, that's excessive. Who says it's excessive? Who?
Right.
Who says it's excessive? Well, I just think it's excessive. Oh, so it's your opinion? You got no argument with them. You know how I can say it's excessive? Here's how I can say it's excessive. Because God says in his law, this is the justice that should be due for theft. This is the justice due for this crime. That's how you should handle it in society. And I think that's a very safe place to be. Because my position is this, thus saith the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And most everyone today is just living as a law unto themselves, and we are reaping the rewards mm-hmm. from that mindset.
Do you know the history?
Oh, so many examples. I mean, incest, bestiality, we could go right down the line.
Yeah.
People say, well, everybody knows incest. Well, everybody knows it's wrong. Well, first, everybody doesn't. But if they did, why would that be? It would be because it's in the authority of God's law and biblical law and not even natural law. And you could go right down the line, Jeff. You're absolutely right. Understanding God's law recognizes we take these out of the realm of the arbitrary and put them in the realm of foundationally absolute. How we apply them? Yeah, there may be some question about that. But foundationally, they're absolute in God's word.
So one person here, Emily, is watching right here. She made a comment. She said, I agree that what Apologia is saying, that the laws of God outlined in Old Testament still have important relevance. But if you agree this to a extreme point, you agree with this to an extreme point, where Old Testament laws become more important to the new covenant? I think, sorry, I just moved up there.
Yeah.
Old Testament laws become more important to the new covenants. Emily, maybe you just came into the chat here. Maybe you're just getting into this, but I just would say respectfully to your sister, you don't seem to be sort of in the same conversation as us, because no one here believes that or teaches that we believe we're in the new covenant. And we believe that in the new covenant, God promised in the Old Testament, Jeremiah 31:31, he said that the new covenant blessing he'll do is he'll do something different that he didn't do before, in that instead of writing his law on stone tablets outside the people of God, he would write the law within them.
Yep.
Which law? The known law, his given law.
Right.
It'd be written now within them. And he says that in a new covenant, he'd do something different where it wouldn't be on stone tablets out there. It was God, he was going to sprinkle clean water on people, remove hearts of stone, give hearts of flesh that were soft. And he says in Ezekiel 36, he'd put his spirit within people and cause them to observe his statutes. That, by the way, is in Ezekiel 36. That's in the context of the law of God. They knew the known law. God's statutes would be written within people. So actually what I'm saying is the new covenant actually gives us the empowerment of the Holy Spirit of God with his law written within us, with now a new desire to do it and accomplish it. Now, new covenant believers have the ability to love God's law rather than despise it,
mm-hmm.
love God's law and do it rather than the Old Testament person who was still in the flesh with stone tablets outside of themselves. Very different context. The new covenant is more glorious because now we have the ability with the Spirit of God to love God's law and statutes.
Jeff, I wish people understood that it's so right. If anything, the law of God has a higher role, even in the new covenant, than the old covenant because of the reasons that you mentioned. So far from saying we're going to kick God's law aside and the new covenant's brought to its very highest form, I think more people need to understand that getting away from the old covenant, and of course the new covenant has replaced the old covenant, doesn't mean getting rid of God's law. That's a completely separate issue.
Yeah, also one thing I just would challenge Emily on, maybe you missed it earlier in the conversation here, the Apostle Paul in the New Covenant assumes the abiding validity of God's law down to details like animal husbandry, and he applies them in the New Covenant. So it just maybe you're just jumping into this conversation. We'll try to give you that grace. We'll just do one more moment here, and then we'll finish up.
These are principles of general equity. Mm-hmm. That is to say, they are not specific to Israel, they are general. So it may be, for instance, that in some of the specific laws given to Israel, we see reflections of general equity. And so if your ox gores another person's ox, you see, the principle of general equity of respecting someone else's property is reflected there. But if there's a certain sacrifice or some other requirement at that point, that would not be general but specific.
Now, I was in a...
Wait a minute. He's made a big... I don't think people see what he did there.
Yeah.
He just very suddenly kind of said he cited the specific case about the ox, and you said it said, well, there might be some cases, but he... That's arbitrary to say in some cases this the general equity applies, but in all cases it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's going to take it in that one case, as he should, why wouldn't that lead him to say, well, we probably should take general equity across the board?
Right. Well, also, I think, he, brother, if you watch this, you just granted the theonomic principled position.
Right.
And that is to say that, like, look, that is clearly a principle that is righteous, that you would say, I'm going to respect and honor that law today, but I don't take the specific Mosaic legislation in all the ways that it was presented there, and I don't drop it on society today. I take the general equity, which you recognize is valid and possibly even appropriate today. So are we done?
What I'm confused too, was he defining general equity as in something specific to our time? And not the general principle from the Old Testament.
I was a little confused at how he was describing general equity there.
That's what I was gathering.
What he was doing is he was citing that Pauline text. He had to come to grips with it, and so he cited that as an example. Well, yeah, that's an example of general equity, and that would apply today. But then he didn't. That did not lead him to an implicit question, which would be, well, if that general equity applies today, shouldn't all of it apply today in the same way?
Right.
And that's what he refuses to do.
Right. There's the inconsistency. And so we just challenge him to think about it. We'll go another 30 seconds or so.
Conversation here with, a theonomist recently, in which he asked me if I believe putting people to death for bestiality. And the implication seemed to be that he would. So is it just all the judicial laws and under the Mosaic Covenant that a theonomist would continue to...
Okay, this is a good place to end. And we'll try our best to get back to this. Good place to end. Let's have a real conversation here, guys. If you got kids around, just be cautious with this part. But let's be straight. Let's just have straight talk, serious talk. Let's stop pretending. Let's be real. Today, bestiality is a thing. It's a thing.
Yeah.
It's happening a lot. Fairly recently in Arizona history, there was a man who was a firefighter in Mesa or Gilbert. He was caught in his barn. Someone stumbled upon him while he was in the middle of engaging in something horrific with an animal in a barn, a firefighter. Now, he was caught, and he was actually punished. Today in Arizona, he was punished for the crime of doing this with an animal. But the question has to be asked, because lots of people, you know, I mean, farm porn is a thing. Is it sinful today? It should be seen as a crime today. Should we allow, as a community and as a society, should we allow human beings to copulate and to do these things with animals? Mm-hmm. Is it still a sin and a crime? Because God says it's an abomination and it's a criminal act. And you know what's amazing? In the American civil system, in the states, you can still find that it is against the law in the states. Where do you think they got that from?
And in almost every other Christian-influenced culture, Jeff, not just the United States.
That's right.
This idea that, well, it's decriminalized today. How dare anyone ever think it should be a crime? Or for most of human history, in virtually every Christian-influenced society, where there may not have been the death penalty per se, there was a civil penalty. So the notion that these people were all just rubes is just utterly false. This really was a part, not just Christian revelation, but in Christian society.
Yeah. And I do have a sincere question, okay? Because we're reaping it all now, the rewards of our culture engagement, brothers and sisters. But let me ask you a question. Not very long ago in the West, and I would say just say in the United States of America, homosexuality was seen as both a sin and a crime. Bestiality was seen as a sin and a crime. And there were statutes dealing with that as a crime in this country. Now, that got released and relaxed all over the world, and now we live in a society where little eight-year-olds are being put on medication to stop them from actually getting through puberty. We've got people today who think that it's okay to castrate teenagers and little children who decide they don't really feel like a boy any longer. We've got a sin strutting down the streets. You've got naked as the day they came into the world, men parading down city streets near you with little children along the sidelines of these parades. You've got people today doing the raunchiest, most disgusting, deplorable acts in public. You've got people celebrating their sin like Sodom in the streets of America today. And I just have a question. How are we doing? How are we doing? We say that it shouldn't be seen as a sin or a crime, or maybe it's maybe a sin, but not a crime any longer. How are we doing? How's your society doing when you've abandoned God's stipulated statutes as to how you should actually look through the sexual ethics of your nation? By the way, also adultery should be seen as a crime, of course, and any number of things, incest, of course. But we need to talk about these things because here's the deal. Look, we need to get our heads out of our bubble and realize there's a whole world around us that's engaging in things that God says are sins and crimes, and they're destroying the world. And I want to say this, Ecclesiastes chapter 8 says that because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the hearts of men are emboldened to do wickedness. When justice isn't done and done swiftly, people are emboldened to do wickedness. And boy, 2020 in North America is such a great example of that, brothers and sisters. People are emboldened to do wickedness.
Yeah.
Why? Also, you got people that go in and out of jail, 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 in and out, in and out. Why? Because there's no justice anyways. They go in there to get trained. They call prison systems and jails, criminals do, school or college, because that's where you go to get educated to be a better criminal out there. And they go back and forth and back and forth. My high school sweetheart, girl that I was seeing through high school, she was raped on her bathroom floor during her birthday party. The guy got 6 months. 6 months. Confessed to it, done, signed, sealed, and delivered. 6 months in jail for raping a girl on her birthday party. Is that justice? Is that justice? We had a guy come to Apologia Church very early on. We found out later, and we blocked and prohibited him from being around us because he was threatening people. We found out that he was engaged in the most heinous acts against a little girl that was his stepdaughter for years. Well, he raped this child for years, and he served a decade.
Yeah, something like that.
A decade in jail. And then what did he do? When he was released, he was running a rampage on the streets of Gilbert. Trying to threaten members of our church.
Yeah.
He was unsafe. He was unstable. And so I just think these are questions that need to be answered. And God's law, I believe, provides the righteous answer. Andrew, thank you for joining us today. Final thoughts, brother.
Yeah, I will. I was going to say this. God created man in his image. And when he gave biblical law, it wasn't meant to be oppressive. It was meant to protect man from things that would harm him. God knows what man is like better than we know what we are like. Therefore, when he says, don't commit homosexuality, he's saying, don't harm yourself. Don't commit adultery, don't harm yourself. Don't worship false gods, don't harm yourself. Don't steal, don't harm yourself. You see, God created the hardware and the software, and he knows how the system breaks. Sin breaks the system. And therefore, God's law, all of it, is the operating system. And if we operate within the operating system and don't violate it, things go well with us. If we break it, if we break the law, then we are harmed. God's law is not oppressive. God's law is a means of liberation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we all believe that God's law can justify nobody. It never has. It never will.
Right.
But God's law is also good. Here's my challenge to anyone listening to this show right now. Go read Psalm 119 and ask yourself, can I affirm this under the new covenant? Do I believe it? Good challenge to do. Andrew, where can people go to get more from you, brother?
They go to ChristianCulture.com, written solidly. Also, Doc Sandlin, written solidly.com. Thank you guys for having me on and for letting me promote CCL. I appreciate you so much.
We appreciate you, brother. Look forward to having you on again sometime soon.
Yeah, we'll have we'll have to continue this because there's a lot more really great
stuff. There's a
lot more. Yeah, we didn't really touch it.
We'll get into more, brother. Thank you, Dr. Sandlin. Everybody, thank you for watching right now here at Apologia Radio. Get more at ApologiaStudios.com. As always, please go to endabortionnow.com. Go there and give. And if you're going there as a church, go there, get signed up so you can get all the free training, all the free resources. We just sent out media kits to a number of churches who are out now able to actually do what we're doing with their own media content with the same message to end abortion in our nation. Endabortionnow.com is where you go. That's Luke the Bear.
Peace out.
I'm Jeff the Coleman the Ninja. We'll catch you next time right here on Apologia Radio.